3. Always on the cutting edge.
Voice of the Cape Drive Time, welcome back to the show. 0722380712 is the WhatsApp number. Feel free to query, comment or criticize. Of course, all the social media platforms are there on our Android app. Go to the website, click on that, and you can take us wherever you go. Far-right candidate Jair Bolsonaro won Brazil's presidential elections, signaling a political shift for South America's most populous nation and largest economy. Official results gave Bolsonaro a 55.2% share of the vote in last week's runoff, comfortably ahead of Fernando Haddad, the candidate of the center-left Workers' Party, who garnered 44.8% of the vote. Online is Associate Fellow, U.S. and America Program at Chatham House, Richard Lapper. Richard, welcome to the show.
Hi there, and thanks for having me on.
This certainly is quite a turn-up for the books, looking at the situation from a distance, but when we read your article and try and understand what's going on in Brazil, kind of predictable that a right-wing candidate would sweep into power?
Yeah, I think it's been on the cards, to be honest. I think people expected maybe a year ago that the establishment would recover as the election campaign got underway, but I thought this was a possibility sort of going back to 2016-17, to be honest, for several reasons that I can explain. And in fact, I think over the last few weeks, the first round, Jair Bolsonaro was well ahead of the pack, really. There's an awful lot of sentiment against the PT that's run Brazil since 2003 until 2016. An awful lot of anti-PT Workers' Party sentiment around in Brazil. So I don't think it's been a huge surprise.
When we look at the scenario, Brazil, no different to most of the world's emerging economies, in South Africa, we're also going through our own set of painful scenarios. But Brazil's economy took a big blow, trouble with foreign payments, trouble with foreign debt, etc. Do you think Bolsonaro has got the answers?
Well, good question. I mean, let's look at why Bolsonaro won this election in a bit more detail. I mean, I think, it's interesting. There are some comparisons with South Africa. I was actually based in Johannesburg for the Financial Times for a couple of years, 2008-2010. And I knew Brazil before that too. So I was constantly comparing the two countries. And I do think it's quite interesting. Look, the main problem with Brazil, I mean, there was an economic downturn in 2014-16. There was a big increase in organized crime and worries about violence that got bigger and bigger from really been steady increase over since 2000. That's been a big concern. There's quite a lot of social conservatism in Brazil. It's got this image as being quite a libertarian country. You think pictures of, scantily clad women at the Rio de Janeiro carnival. But actually, at the grassroots, Brazil is quite conservative. And Protestant evangelicals have been growing in terms of numbers and in terms of influence in the country. Something like nearly one in three Brazilians are members of evangelical Protestant churches. And then on top of that, you've had this huge problem of corruption and a real repudiation of the political class. And that's included the whole of the center of the political spectrum in Brazil that's really run the country since the mid-1980s, when Brazil, broke with military rule. Now, the parties that have been associated with civilian government in Brazil have all been really hammered at the polls this time. Bolsonaro was an outsider. He's been in nine different parties over the past 20 years. He's been a marginal, slightly exotic candidate who said politically unacceptable things, notoriously homophobic, sexist, racist. Used to lament the decline, the loss. He celebrated military rule. He used to say it was a good thing it was. So he's a real outsider. But because these centre parties have suffered so badly, he's been able to come in. And that's why I think, you know, that's why he's won, right? Now, the question now is, where do we go next? What's going to happen? Is he going to be able to answer? Is he going to be able to provide answers for all the problems that Brazilians now feel? And, you know, there are two, I think there are two big challenges out there. One is law and order, you know. I think that one recent poll, 93% of Brazilians live in fear of being the victim of violent crime at one time or another during the year. The poll from January this year. So there's a tremendous amount of fear around. How is he going to be able to solve organized crime? And the second question, how is he going to be able to get the economy moving? Brazil's recovered from the recession of 2014-16, but only very timidly. A little bit like South Africa, it's not really. I mean, you know, it's gone down into recession, and it's coming out of that recession. But you're still, you know, people are not feeling the benefits. Yeah, and he's got to be able to. He's really got to be able to find answers to these two questions.
Wow. All I can say is, from my experience of South Africa, that's an inbox from hell, actually.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a really difficult set of challenges. I mean, those two challenges alone. And, I mean, where did he go? Okay, so in terms of organized crime, you know, what Bolsonaro has promised is a kind of violent crackdown on those responsible. I mean, he says that police should be allowed to, you know, shoot to kill. They shouldn't be kind of just picking up suspects and interrogating them. They should just shoot them on the spot. That kind of a liberal talk. Well, you know, I don't think it works, right? And I think the evidence from Latin America and elsewhere, you know, in the emerging world suggests that's not going to have the effect desired, actually. You're going to just get more bloodshed. The problem is, you know, Brazil, like many other countries, is faced with organized crime that's organizing transnationally, and that is very, very powerful. And to be able to tackle that, you need to cooperate with neighboring states. You need to have, I mean, Brazil's made up of 27 states. It's a federation, and police forces are run by state governors, not by the federal president. So you've got to have greater cooperation between the states, between different police forces. So those are kind of fairly important logistical issues you've got to address. So those are big problems, and it's not clear, to be honest, that the incoming team that takes over in January has realized the sort of scale of the challenge that it faces.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely massive, and something that you've touched on as well. Predictably, it seems as if he says he'd like to cozy up more to the United States. But there's a problem here, and you quite rightly point out that China, like many other developing economies, is very reliant upon China for trade. So one was asking the question, why get cozy to the United States when you're actually trading with China?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Well, look, I mean, there is a rationale to it. I mean, in the sense that, you know, the sort of things that Brazil exports to China, just as South Africa does, actually, are mainly primary commodities, yeah? So in Brazil's case, it's iron ore. Brazil's one of the biggest exporters of iron ore, and it's soy, which is a very big producer of soy. Now, those are huge exports. Those are the two top exports for Brazil. But and it does account altogether, Brazilian exports to China, something like 20% of overall Brazilian exports. Now, the sort of things it trades with the U.S. are slightly higher value added, more complicated products. Yeah, whether you get sort of a higher value per unit, as it were. So there is a kind of sense in trying to increase things with the United States. But if you kind of enter into a kind of Trumpian trade war with China, which you know, I'm sure that you know, Trump would like support from the south of the hemisphere in this, you know, against China. He'd like to get Brazil on his side in that, as it were. You know, Brazil's taking a big risk because it potentially puts quite a lot of his exports at risk. Also, the farmers who export soy are the very same people who were voting for Bolsonaro. They're one of his big support bases, so that's going to put. You know, that's not an easy... That's a bit of a paradox there.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that Brazil you know, again, very parallel to South Africa. I noticed this, you know, when I was, I wrote a lot about this when I was in Johannesburg a decade ago. You know, the rising investment from China. It's not just about trade. I mean, China is prepared to invest in lots of things. And you know, if you look at the Brazilian economy now, and we've got you know, for example, the company that does the biggest electricity transmission in the whole of Brazil, huge country, is a Chinese company, State Grid. So you can't put that at risk, really. It's not the same for Brazil as it would be for as it is for the United States. So there is a problem. What I think we're going to see is that I think Brazil is going to follow U.S. foreign policy and on perhaps some more symbolic issues. So there's been a lot of speculation that Brazil will move its Israeli embassy to Jerusalem. You know, quite a provocative thing as far as the Palestinian population is concerned, but it's something that U.S. allies have done in Central America, for example. That's a possible direction. But, you know, we wait and see. We don't know. There's a bigger economic challenge, of course, for Brazil, is getting public sector accounts, public accounts in order. Brazil's got a big fiscal deficit, and it's got a huge deficit on its public pensions provision. And bringing order to that will not be an easy task at all.
And, of course, there's also mention of SOEs, state-owned enterprises. As in South Africa, they seem to have been a drain on Brazilian revenue as well.
Well, I think, yeah, these are, you know, Brazil's got over nearly 150 SOEs. The biggest ones, Petrobras and Eletrobras, which is not big. Like, Petrobras is an oil company. Eletrobras is an energy company. And Petrobras was at the center of the corruption scandal. You know, so that it was over-invoicing construction companies for work that it was commissioning and, you know, using some of the proceeds of those contracts to pay off politicians, right? And that's kind of, so it's not only, I mean, it's not been that inefficient, but certainly the corruption that's associated with Petrobras has been quite a big part of Brazil's problems. Yeah, I mean, there's a case that Brazil could raise quite a lot of money by selling some of these state assets. And, you know, it needs to raise money. It really needs to raise money. It's got a GDP, it's got a fiscal deficit in the range of 8% of GDP, quite a big gap to fill. And, yeah, I mean, privatization is going to come onto the end. The thing for Bolsonaro is that, you know, Brazilians are not that happy about privatization. And indeed, some of Bolsonaro's supporters in the military security apparatus have traditionally been quite in favor of government ownership of these kind of what they would call strategic assets, you know, the oil sector, the energy sector. So all sorts of contradictions there, really.
Interesting times indeed. Richard Lapper, Assistant Fellow, U.S. and America Program, Chatham House, talking to us about far-right candidate Jair Bolsonaro winning Brazil's presidential elections and what it could mean. Richard Lapper, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.